Hello, welcome to the Citywire Funds Fanatic podcast. My name is Gavin Lumsden, and today I'm talking to Carl Harold Janssen, lead fund manager of the International Biotechnology Trust, which is a £275 million investment trust listed on the London Stock Exchange. Hello, Carl. Thanks very much for joining me. I'm interested to know what kind of year you've had, because everyone's been very busy with COVID-19 and the implications that's had. But your colleague, your co-manager on the investment trust, Kate Bingham, was appointed to chair the UK Vaccines Task Force, which is trying to scale up manufacturing once a cure for COVID-19 has been found. So has that made you a lot busier than you would have been?
Hi, Gavin, and thank you for having me on this pod. Thank you very much. Yes, it's been a great year, and we are super proud of the fact that Kate is on this task force. Of course, I cannot comment on what they are doing. I will only comment on the vaccines in general and so on. It's been a very busy year. We had a flu or a vaccine development that has been very quick from the start of the virus infection in China in January. We knew about it in January. And now we have, as of today, I was just checking a website here, 126 vaccines in development, 37 in human testing and 91 in preclinical testing.
So over 120 investigations into a vaccine and a cure. That's an extraordinary number.
A few months from now, maybe next year, we could have a vaccine approved in one of these in developments. Of course, one vaccine approved would be good. It would mean that we have a potential vaccine that can be given to many people. I guess we don't need 10, we don't need 20, we don't need 60. But if we have one, it's better than zero, and then we are starting on the right track. So there will be some failures along the line. There will be some successful vaccines developed. But we're actually doing this in a very unusual way. It's like everyone is doing everything they can to develop a vaccine. So there are various ways to do this. You can do the genetic way, where you vaccinate with mRNA or DNA of the virus. You can do the viral vector way, where you put the COVID virus within another virus, like an adenovirus. That's the Astra way. Or you could do whole virus that you attenuate. And you can give that. So within all of these various buckets, there are many companies doing various, variants of this. So that maybe my thoughts are that, one of these will cross the bridge at some points. So the unprecedented thing is that we do so much in parallel. Usually when you develop a drug or vaccine, you do it sequentially. You do one thing, you check it, you do the next thing. And in this way, you can save cost. But you can also reduce the risk, of course. And so doing all of these parallel things that we're doing now will speed up things, but it will also mean that it costs more to develop. And that, if we are not careful, we could develop something that is not safe. So I think from that point of view, it's a good thing today that the company stopped the trial when they saw something that they didn't like. And that, I think, it gives me a very, very good good sense that they know what they're doing, and that they want to develop something that is safe.
Yes, it's been a good reminder that this is an extraordinary timetable that companies and governments are trying to work to here. Normally, it takes several years to develop and test new treatments. It's all very good sort of PR for the reputation of the pharmaceutical industry, isn't it? I'm just wondering, will companies, any of the successful companies, make any or much money from a successful vaccine? Because it's been quite a lot of talk about what level of pricing there should be for a successful treatment.
Yeah, I mean, as you just said, the companies that succeed, so we have all the failures that will not make any money. They will only make losses on this. And if we have many successful vaccines, they will compete in the marketplace, and maybe they will not be profitable even if they have sales. And we don't know the price yet. So and also there have been some companies saying we're going to sell this at cost.
Now, AstraZeneca, I think, has been saying, it would sell it at cost or for a few dollars a dose while the pandemic was going on.
So I don't think, you know, we're going to make, you know, enormous amount of money from in these companies from this vaccine. I think that some companies will make money at some point, maybe not early in the early stage, maybe later on, if you would like to have a stockpiling of vaccines from governments for the future.
Yeah. So from an investment point of view, you know, you're a stock picker, you're running this portfolio of biotech. Is it purely biotech stocks, by the way, or do you have healthcare companies in the mix as well?
Yeah, with biotech stocks, we think about, you know, companies that develop drugs or vaccines. There can also be some medtech companies and so on. But we focus mostly on innovative drugs, innovative companies, companies that have new drugs on the market. So that's a big part of the portfolio. But we also have larger companies that have good sales, good earnings, and multiples on earnings that are not demanding.
Yeah. Are there any of the vaccine developers, I'm thinking of COVID here, of interest to you from an investment point of view?
Yeah, I won't comment on what we invest in, but I can say in general that the companies that develop vaccines have had a good run on the stock market, so their valuations have increased quite a lot. So if I'm very optimistic about the possibility that we will have a vaccine on the market, I don't see right now, you know, from a pure investment point of view, that this is a good place to put your money in, because valuations have had a nice kind of a hype. You know, you've seen that before. You know, somebody becomes very, very popular, and valuations, you know, skyrocket, and maybe that is not the right time to invest in such an areas.
Yes, I'm going to ask you about what other areas are of interest then, but I'm just sticking with the COVID. To what extent has it disrupted this huge international effort that's going on? To what extent has it disrupted work elsewhere within drug development and pharmaceuticals?
I wouldn't say that the development of vaccines had disrupted the development of other drugs. What has disrupted, though, is the fact that people have not been able to visit hospitals. I mean, patients haven't had to stay home. Some hospitals have been closed, or you're not allowed to go out and so on, and you're quarantined. All of these things have, you know, in the second quarter in particular, reduced the sales of some products, and also reduced the clinical development. You know, certain clinical trials have slowed down the recruitment rate. So that has come back and been, I think the everything starts to open up now. Hospitals open up to treat people that have other diseases than COVID. So I think, you know, we are on a recovery now that will, but during Q2 we had, you know, a strong impact on the for most companies. Some companies were not impacted, though, and I'll speak of one of them a little bit later.
Okay. And in general, biotechs had it's been an awful year for stock markets, particularly in the UK, but the biotech sector has had a pretty good time. I was looking at the Nasdaq biotech, which is the main index in the US, obviously. In sterling terms, not in dollars, but in sterling terms, that's up 7.5% this year, which, as I say, looks brilliant compared to the UK stock market, which is down 20%. So, I've read some commentary from you saying that the biotech sector is actually undervalued. But as I say, it's in a positive situation so far this year. So how come it's undervalued, and by how much?
Well, if you talk about the Nasdaq Biotech Index as a proxy for the biotech sector, then we can look at how that index has developed over the last, you know, 10 years. It had a good run to 2015, but from 2015 till today, it has only, you know, appreciated 16% in US dollars over 5 years. So you could say it actually consolidated. The quick run in the 10 to 15 was, you know, good earnings expansion and multiple expansion and also, you know, maybe a little bit of hype in 2015. Since then, the index has traded sideways. While other indexes like S&P 500 in the US is up 100%, Nasdaq is up 150% in the last 5 years, while Nasdaq Biotech Index is only up 15%. So the multiples have, you know, the index has grown into its multiple, if we may say so. Stocks that were expensive in 15, they become much, much less expensive now. And I think, you know, that the fundamentals are very strong. You know, innovation is very strong for this sector. We have, you know, many new products coming to the market. I just checked today, we have 40 approvals in the US this year. That's a very good number. It could be one of the best years ever. I don't know. We had, we have 4 months to go. And we have many more drugs in development in the last couple of years than we had before, based on, you know, enormous, you know, new knowledge in science that is translating into new products.
What areas are driving innovation in the sector? Where are the key scientific advances?
There are basically, you know, one important advantage that you really need to achieve one thing. You have to understand what's driving the disease. You know, why do we get cancer? Now, when you know that, you can develop a drug. We need to know, why do we develop Alzheimer? Then we can develop Alzheimer drugs. So currently, you know, in cancer area, we start to understand, you know, what's driving all these tumors, and then we can develop drugs for that. While in other areas, we're much, much earlier, you know, for Alzheimer in the brain, we still don't know very much. So in that area, we are not. It's much more difficult. But all in all, you know, we are there in so many areas. We make many new findings, and we start to understand the disease. That's on one side. The other side is that the technologies are developing very fast. So we have not only like traditional pills that you take for as drug therapies, but you also have new therapies like cell therapy, you have gene therapy, RNA therapy, you have now also gene editing. And on the protein side, you have more complicated proteins, not only antibodies, but bispecifics and so on. So there is not only one car model, you know, there are now 10 car models that trucks, there are many things, and new things, you know, that can be used to treat these diseases. So on multiple sides, there is a good development of science regarding science and regarding, you know, the product development side.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, I'm hoping you're going to talk about a couple of the companies in a short while, but just sort of sticking at the kind of overall sort of market conditions, obviously been very volatile, but looking ahead, we've obviously got the US is the key market, the key country for this industry. And we've got the US election coming up in just over a month's time. So, and with the real prospect, of course, that Trump may not win re-election, and the Democrats and Joe Biden may gain power. In the past, people would have viewed in the pharmaceutical industry, the biotech industry, would have viewed that prospect with some alarm, perhaps. But what's your view of the impact, potential impact of the US election? Because drug pricing and biotech have been a real political football in the US in recent years.
Yes, last election we had more discussion about drug pricing. This election is more about the healthcare system, and you know, if we have a Trump win, then it would be more of the same. If there will be a Biden-Harris ticket that will win, then as you ask, you know, what will happen? I think what Biden will do is kind of continue within the healthcare where Obama left. So Obama had Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, and I think Biden will continue to improve that system. And Trump retracted a bit. He will probably, you know, put things back again and see to that more people have better coverage. So that is kind of reforming within the system rather than changing the whole system. It's not like Medicare for All that we were worried about earlier. Now it's more like reforming within the system. And in particular, it is the copay that people have to pay, what people have to pay out of pocket for when they are insured. They also have to pay their own little part there called copay. And how to do that. This copay has been increasing in the US the last couple of years, it's become quite expensive to pay for your drugs, even if you have an insurance. And I think that's where we're going to see some changes. Those changes, in our view anyway, will be a neutral to positive outcome, because probably it will be slightly larger margins, lower margins for the companies, but higher sales. So all in all, you know, that will probably be a kind of a neutral to slightly positive. So that's kind of how we think about it. It's not going to be a major transformation after the election. It will, even if Biden wins, you know, it will be, you know, more of what Obama was doing, and it will increase the market so that more people that currently can't afford it can afford it. Maybe the margins will go down a bit, but probably, you know, the volume will increase.
Okay, great. Well, that's encouraging. Let's talk about some of the stocks you've got in the trust, Carl. But also, I'm just wondering more on a general point about stocks. Just when I look at some of the holdings that you and other funds have, some of the biotech stocks seem to attract quite a lot of shorting interest, you know, investors taking bets against the share prices. Is that because, you know, these companies, their success is quite binary and it's based on whether, you know, their latest drugs succeed in a trial or not? It's a kind of yes or no, black and white situation.
Yes, shorting stocks is used, you know, in many sectors, not only in the biotech sector. There could be many reasons why you want to short the stocks or the market, you know, as an insurance, maybe for your portfolio if it's on a sector basis. Of course, you can short the stock going into binary event, but you know it's not necessarily you make money of it if it's a positive outcome. So I don't think it's that that clear, you know, that the binary event thing has anything to do with shorting. And you might think that's the way it works, but I mean, there are many more reasons, you know, why you would short shares. There are various funds that could be in market neutral, so they have a long side and a short side, and kind of balance things in another way. So I wouldn't be that kind of clear cut about it.
Okay, no, I just was wondering. Well, let's talk about one of the companies in the portfolio, Horizon Therapeutics. It's actually the biggest position, or was at the end of July. That's like a lot of the stocks you own is listed on the NASDAQ in the US. It specializes in rare and rheumatic diseases, and it seems to be doing very well of late. What's been happening there? What do you like about the company?
Yeah, Horizon is one of several companies that we like. The main reason we like it currently is that it has launched a new drug that's called Tepezza. It was launched earlier this year, and it has a very strong uptake in the start. It is a drug that is given for protruding eyes, so bulging eyes, or exophthalmos, that in Latin, that you get as a side effects of a disease where you have a hyperthyroidism. And that is not very nice. It doesn't look very nice, and it doesn't feel very nice to have this. Until now, we've had the therapy has been surgery mostly. And you can just imagine that's not a nice thing to have surgery behind your eye. So this is a drug that is given. It's not surgery. It's a drug that is given as any other drug, and it has a good effect on that on the protruding eyes. So we thought it could be, you know, good market. It's a new market since there are no other drugs on the market. So you really don't know then if it's going to sell well or not. But usually when you have something with a good effect, with little competition, because there are no other drugs right now, we thought that this might be actually a good place to be in. And at the second quarter, they actually increased, you know, the sales outlook from the company quite a lot. So the stock has done very well, I think. We thought it might reach $1 billion sales, but probably it will be more than that. It's actually one of the I was talking earlier about that within the, when the COVID pandemic was at its height, you know, in the second quarter, sales were coming down, but this sales were actually doing very well, this drug anyway. As an extra kind of give us an extra comfort that even when there are headwinds in the market, the drug does very well. That's a good sign.
Yeah, people continue to be ill and unwell, and I suppose the issue is whether they can get to hospital. But yes, I can see conditions carry on.
It's also kind of a prevalence market in the sense that people, there are currently a lot of patients that has this disease, but it's also an incidence market, meaning there are also a lot of people that get this disease every year. So it's a good market to be in.
Right. Would you characterize that bulging eyes condition? Is that a rare disease? Because obviously the sales are going quite well at the moment. So there's a lot of people presumably with that condition. Or is it that it's just quite an expensive treatment because there is no competition?
It is a rare disease because it's characterized as less than 200,000 people in the US, I think it is. That's a good pricing for that, but there's good demand, and also it has been developed in a way that, you know, probably you can use it for various stages, also not only one stage of the disease, increasing the market size. So we like that.
Okay, and what about Gilead Sciences? That's the second biggest position again at the end of July in the international biotechnology, but that's had a more mixed few years, as far as I can tell. In fact, the share price has really tumbled, and there's been speculation that Astra, cropping up a lot today, AstraZeneca could make a bid for it because it was presumably looking pretty cheap. But what do you like about Gilead? It's a big company, but what's it doing that you think is potentially exciting?
Gilead is a company that over many, many years has developed drugs for HIV. So they have a kind of a more or less own that market. They have combination therapy for HIV with now up to four different drugs in one kind of therapy. And we think that is a market that's not going to go away. I mean, you can't cure HIV. You have to give these type of drugs forever, it seems, until there will be a cure. And maybe there will be some cure at some point in the future, but right now there is not. So yeah, it's a chronic therapy for a chronic condition. So the company generates quite a lot of cash flow from that. And if you look at valuation, and I'm just kind of looking at the current valuation of Gilead, you know, the adjusted P multiple is less than 10 for 2020. I think that is kind of a good proposition in a portfolio to have not only companies with high growth, but also companies that have a good cash flow at a very low valuation. And this type of, you know, big companies that that have a pipeline, but maybe not a pipeline that's big enough, but very good cash flow, could also be acquired in the future. And that's why we have seen this discussion in the marketplace that maybe somebody will be interested in acquiring them, like an Astra or someone else. So we thought that is at right now, you know, a good company, I think, with that from a valuation point of view. That's why we like it.
Okay. And well, I've mentioned that a lot of stocks in the portfolio are in the US, but you do invest elsewhere. And in Europe, I understand there's a company called Genmab, Danish company. What does it do, and what do you like about it?
We like several companies in Europe. We like also companies in the US and in Europe. Why we like Genmab is because it's a company that has several drugs approved and good sales. So they've been around for quite a few years developing monoclonal antibodies. So they're focused on one particular therapeutic modality, protein therapy, mostly through the monoclonal antibodies and derivatives of those. The drugs they have on the market is Darzalex, daratumumab, or the second one is Areza, ofatumumab, and the third one is Tepezza, teprotumumab. Very strange names all these drugs have, right?
They are, always have very, they're very formidable names. What are they cures for?
They are for various things. You know, the two first ones are for tumors mostly, and similar kind of indications where you want to kind of reduce the effect of the immune system also, like autoimmune diseases. But the third one is the one I just mentioned with Horizon. So Horizon licensed this drug from Genmab. So Genmab has actually out-licensed all these three drugs I mentioned. The first one to Johnson & Johnson, the second one to Novartis, and the third one to Horizon, and have good royalties on it. And they also have a very strong pipeline, quite a few drugs in development, and starting off as a small company, I think they're growing steadily, and eventually maybe they will even, you know, have their own sales, even if they don't have it right now. So I think that's it's always good to invest with companies and people that have been successful, that have achievements. And this company's achievement is that they actually got three drugs approved on the market. I think that's astonishing. Probably that, I guess, increased the probability that it might have more drugs approved in the future. But just based on these three drugs, you know, we look, the sales prospects looks very, very good.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks for that. And just going back, having another overview of the whole sector. You know, earlier you mentioned the past 5 years has been a bit of a fallow period for biotech, but the 10-year figures are generally are much, much higher. So what, we've got the election uncertainty in the US that we've covered, and that doesn't seem too risky at the moment, too alarming at the moment. But what are the prospects that those 10-year figures could return? You know, the strong performance that the sector had before 2015 could return.
It's very simple, really. The whole sector is driven by top line. You know, if there's good top line, there will be even better earnings, and that will drive the sector. And I think currently, with many drugs approved this year, just as last year, with a lot of more coming in the pipeline, with a lot of innovation and new drugs, as well as, you know, on the other side, on the demand side, we have an aging population. With more people that are in the age bracket where you need healthcare, and you also have more people in parts of the world that earlier could not afford healthcare that now can afford healthcare. So I think on the demand side there is also a very good outlook for the industry.
Okay, and just lastly, touching on, I'd like to touch on dividends, because obviously a lot of investors are very keen on getting an income from their investments, and that's very difficult when interest rates are so low in the UK and elsewhere, and when companies have been cutting their dividends because of the impact of COVID-19. Biotech is not a sector is known for its dividends, is it? It's largely about capital growth and rising share prices. But you take a different tack at the trust. You pay a semi-annual dividend out of the capital that you're making. Am I right?
That's correct.
And so that's a 4% yield that you're offering by and large.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's great that you provide that clarity on the payouts, but I just wonder when does it increase pressure on the portfolio when you go through really tough markets like we did in March when the share prices were falling sharply because of the pandemic?
Well, as you mentioned, there is a semi-annual payment, so and you're asking, you know, how that will affect, you know, the management of the trust. It doesn't really impact very much on a daily basis. Remember, we also have a gearing facility. We can gear up. Currently, we can gear 15%. So, and most of the stocks that I've talked about now and that we invest in are pretty liquid stocks. I mean, trade pretty well. And of course, there are stocks that don't trade very well. But to answer your question, it will not affect. The dividend doesn't affect the way we invest. It doesn't affect our investment strategy, or in any way.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. Well, Carl, I think that's all the questions I've got for now, but thanks very much for your time, and we'll have to wait and see what political and market developments there are, and also hope to see that a cure for COVID-19 comes as soon as possible, and then we can get back to the new normal as soon as possible. Carl, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Gavin. Thank you very much.